Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes and this is still The Unexplained. Hope you're doing all right. Hope life is treating you reasonably well. I'm reading reports of some places maybe going back towards lockdown, which is pretty depressing. Let's hope that that scientific breakthrough that brings us a vaccine or brings us better treatments is getting closer and closer. That is something that all of us, I think, are hoping for. And as for me, well, I'm into my 3.5 month mark on the lockdown, heading towards month four, I think. I don't know. I have definitely lost the plot now. Thank you very much for all of your emails, the great things you say. This is not going to be an edition for shout-outs, but Petrus in Whitehorse in the far north of Canada, an amazing place. And Petrus, I do listen to local radio from there, and I love them talking about the weather up there and how it freezes when it freezes. And the temperatures go into deep minus territory that we can't even imagine here. Must be an incredible place to live. Thank you, Petrus, for the things that you said. Raf, just to address this, Raf was not impressed with my conversation with Nick Pope recently. Felt that I should have been tougher with Nick Pope. You know, it's not for me to put words into any guest's mouth, though, Raf, is what I would say. You know, I'm here to listen to what they have to say. And their views are their views, and their way of seeing things has to be theirs. You know, if a guest is saying something that's completely factually wrong, then, of course, I will challenge them on that. But many things in this world of the unexplained, which makes it so interesting, are shades of grey. People take different views. Raf mentioned, for example, crop circles. Well, you know, I'm not here to tell you that crop circles come from space because I don't know. Equally, I'm not here personally as the person who does this to tell you that crop circles are made by people using boards and mowing devices. You know, I have to hear what people say and then you make the judgment. Which you've done in that case. And thank you, Rafi, regular listener, and it's nice to know that you're there. Thank you very much for your emails. If you want to contact me for any reason, please go to my website, theunexplained.tv. Follow the link and you can send me a message from there. And if you would like to make a donation to the show, and thank you if you have recently from the bottom of my heart, theunexplained.tv, the website, follow the link and there's a PayPal connection that you can make there if you'd like to. And thank you, like I say, if you have made a donation recently. Now to the guest on this edition of The Unexplained, Mark Fiorentino. Mark Fiorentino is a remarkable guy. For starters, he was born on the same date as Einstein, and his work over the years has involved material that Einstein was first there with. And we're going to talk about a lot of topics here. Now, you know that science is not my speciality. So, you know, I was rubbish at physics and anything scientific at school. I think it was down to the teaching, really, as these things are so frequently. But we're going to be talking about a lot of stuff. The unified field theory, anti-gravity, how to break the light speed barrier, near-death experiences, if we can fit that in, and UFO and alien technology. It is a big, big smorgasbord of topics that we're going to cover with Mark Fiorentino. We're going to find out a little bit about him too. So he's the guest on this edition. Thank you as ever to Adam, my webmaster, for his hard work, and to Haley for booking the guests. Let's get to Mark Fiorentino in Florida now. Mark, thank you for coming on The Unexplained.
Oh, you're welcome. Good to be here.
How's Florida? Because I keep reading that the situation to do with COVID-19 is not good in that state.
Yeah, there's an upturn in the infection rate because things are starting to open up. And so that's bad news, basically. But that's what's happening right now.
How are you coping personally?
Well, we're staying at home. My wife and I stay at home. We're trying to avoid any contact. I go out and get the groceries. But other than that, we're staying at home trying to stay safe because we're both over 65. So we got to really be careful about trying not to get it.
Well, I hope science, I hope human ingenuity, and we'll be talking about some of that in this edition of my show. I hope human ingenuity delivers us a solution, you know, soon enough. But my thoughts, you know, I love Florida, and my thoughts go out to the people there, Mark.
No, thank you. I love it too. I'm very happy to be here, retired over here.
Now, Mark, talk to me about you, because I know very little about you, apart from the fact that you share a birth date with Einstein. That's not a bad look. A starting point's go. That's not a bad one.
No, yeah, well, that's how I kind of got into this. Certainly, when I discovered that was basically because I had a request from I was going to catechism class, and the nuns asked us to find a saint on our birthday. And there was no internet back in the day, and I looked on the calendar, and the only name that was on that date was Albert Einstein. So I looked him up and began studying him, and I encountered the unified field theory concept, and I read that, and that struck me solid. I never forgot that. I remember sitting on the floor and saying, "This is important. This means something. I want to know more about it." So that kind of kicked my career off in studying Einstein and the unified field theory. But to extend about me, about what I do, I was in electronics for many years in computer science. I did a lot of troubleshooting, analytic troubleshooting for IBM. I was test engineer for ImageSoft. I worked for Harris Government Systems. We worked on a killer satellite program. So I've been in electronics and computers pretty much all my life.
Okay, when you say a killer satellite program, do you mean a great satellite program or a program to kill satellites?
A program to kill, knock them out of the sky, satellites.
Gee, and I don't know how much of that you can talk. I don't know what kind of agreements you sign for those things, but I mean,
Well, I
is that
was.
in service right now?
I think it still is. I'm sure they've improved it, but the one we designed, this is many years ago. I doubt that it's still classified because they talked about it. They actually used it to knock a satellite out of the sky, and they were talked about it. I think it was over Hawaii somewhere. And the satellite killer satellite missile actually drives straight through the target. It doesn't just blow up near it like the Russian ones do. It hits it head on and annihilates it. So that takes a lot of great telemetry and radar guidance and all of that sort of thing. But that was back in the early 1980s. That's a long time ago.
Okay, so literally kind of Star Wars.
Star Wars,
For
yes,
its
that
day.
was in its day, that was Star Wars sort of stuff.
Boy, okay, well, you know your science clearly, having worked for those big organizations on those projects. Why the great interest, though, from the early age with Einstein's unified field theory? I have to say that you're speaking to somebody who is non-scientific but fascinated by it. If I'd read that when I was a kid, when I was young, then I think I probably would have got a headache, and a lot of it I wouldn't have understood. And that goes for an awful lot of people. So you're clearly, a special individual that it had a fascination for you. So what about it? I'm coming to the point here. What about it was the fascination?
Well, it just seemed to make so much sense. And I guess I was very curious about how things worked. And I was always, as a kid, tearing my toys apart to see the guts inside of the toys, if they were mechanical in any way. I actually tore apart my father's watches one time, very expensive pocket watches, to see how they worked. And so I was always very curious. And it just made so much sense what was being said about the unified field theory that it never left my mind after that. And then there was a couple of more incidences down the line that really continued to steer me in the direction of doing this, because I never went around thinking I was going to write or solve the unified field theory problem, like many people might say that, as children they knew they were going to do it. I didn't. I was just really, really interested and curious, and I kept reading about it. Everything I read, everything I watched on TV, I said, does this relate somehow? So I kept studying Einstein. I kept working at it as a hobby all the years up until recently, when I decided to write the book 4 years ago.
Astonishing, isn't it, how many things, not everything, we have to say, how many things Einstein was right about?
Yeah, he's right about a lot more than they give him credit for. Now, the other interesting part that really steered me very casually over the years, and then more directly in recent times, was a supernatural connection, a psychic connection that goes back from when I was around 19, 20 years old up until today. So I can relay those events to you and how I was thinking as each one happened, because it's a very unusual, strange, and obscure set of circumstances and events that cued me into this even more. But it took my entire lifetime to get there.
You know, it's very, very unusual for a man of science, as you are, and a man of, you know, engineering, as you are, to have any truck with, as we say here, things that are psychic. So, of course, we must get into that. That's going to be a big part of our conversation. Just to explain to listeners, though, who, you know, listen to my show for other reasons, maybe they like the UFO stuff, or, you know, we talk about ghosts and all of those things here. To explain to them what the unified field theory is. Now, I had to call this up on Wikipedia, which is sometimes not the best of sources, but here it is. It says, in physics, a unified field theory is a type of field theory that allows us, that allows all that is usually thought of as fundamental forces and elementary particles to be written in terms of a pair of physical and virtual fields. According to the modern discoveries in physics, forces are not transmitted directly between interacting objects, but instead are described and interrupted by intermediary entities called fields. What does that mean?
Let's go a simpler route, that the one that Einstein, because that's the his idea, his concept is what I followed. I followed his path, his footsteps, basically, and that of Newton and Maxwell and Lorentz. So basically, the unified field theory, as I see it, broken down simply, is electromagnetism and gravity emerge as aspects of a single fundamental field. If you figure that out, if you can describe that, how those aspects all relate, you solve the unified field theory.
Okay, and if those things are connected, then all kinds of things become possible.
Yes, and they are. What I did, in addition to that statement, I broke down his model. That's his basically his unified field theory model. Electromagnetism and gravity are somehow the same, different manifestations of the same thing. I broke it down into the electrostatic field and the magnetic field and the gravitational field. These are the primary fields of force, or the three aspects of the single fundamental field. Then the single fundamental field would be the ether.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So basically, everything works through that field.
And, you know, if that is your understanding of things, then it makes everything easier to explore, and it makes everything easier to explain.
Well, you first have to define the problem. What's the problem, and what are the parts, and then explain how they relate. And that's basically what I did in my book.
Okay. And what about the psychic side of this? That's what you were about to tell me about, because that is something that most scientists would still today, I suspect, although, you know, that number is decreasing, be shaking their heads about.
Well, it's a long process that I went through, and I've always had an open mind. And in this business of this particular problem, one needs to have an open mind. And I think that's a problem with the scientists of today. They have a lack of diversity of thought when it comes to physics and science in general. They adhere to the scientific method and are very stringent. And so it would never occur to them to consider that maybe they should go to the source being God. And since my theory is an intelligent design theory, that would offend or upset a lot of scientists. Not all scientists are atheists, but many are, especially some of the leading scientists. So I do have a spiritual connection in that I kept an open mind to the idea that I should go to the source to solve this problem. And I got that idea because of all the psychic things that happened in my life starting in the year 1974. And if you want, I'll go through that quickly and give you an idea of what happened.
I'd like that, because it's fascinating. If you allow for God and you allow for things that are psychic, then a lot of people would say, how can you then be scientific and have fixed and determined laws about how things work? I mean, that's the dichotomy there. But please tell me the story.
Okay. Well, let's start at the beginning here, when I had my very first psychic encounter as a kid. I think I was around 19. And me and a bunch of the guys decided we were going to do this place in Florida called Casadega, which is the spiritualist capital of North America. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's a town filled with psychics. It's on the way to Daytona Beach.
Well, listen, I've been to Florida. I would love to have called in there if I'd known about it. Where about, did you say, in fact, I've been to Daytona Beach. Strange, I never found it. Okay.
It's on just off of I-4 on the way up to Daytona Beach.
Okay.
And so me and a bunch of guys, you know, football players or the different types of guys, we all drove up on the way and we were going to stop there and just check it out. Me and Duff, Jeff Jones were in my car and then the rest were in the other car. And it was a spooky October day and it was very blustery, very windy. And we thought this would be fun just to go and have, you know, a basic, our fortunes told. Just for fun. That's all it was about. And so we went up there and we stopped in town and it was just in the middle of the woods. It was very quiet, kind of spooky. And we got out of our cars and we were talking and then a big branch blew off the off a tree and then crashed on them, our friend's car. And they got spooked and said, "We're getting out of here." And they left. So that left just me and Duff.
Gee, so they were scared off because they thought that was not a coincidence.
Well, yeah, they got scared because there was like nobody out. Town was completely like deserted, but everybody was inside and it was just spooky. And it has an eerie feeling to it, Casadega. So Duff and I were still very curious, and we started knocking on doors. And we'd knock on a door, and then we'd see the people roll up in clothes and everything and then walk away and not answer the door. And so we were starting to get spooked. But then we finally came upon this little cottage, and it was an old lady that lived there. Her name was Martha McKay. And she let us in. She was very polite and nice. And I went first, and then Duff went after me. And I had a very normal reading, although there was one strange thing that was said at the beginning. She said, "In your final days, you will be a spiritual teacher." I thought, well, okay.
just remind me, how old were you then?
I was around 19.
Okay. Well, it's not really the time to be thinking about those things, is it?
Exactly. And I didn't take much consideration of that or thought. I did remember it, though. It stuck with me. And then she went and correctly described my future. I was going to be married, which was what I was really wanting to find out because I was shy and I was wondering if I was ever going to meet a girl and get married because that's what really what I was interested in. And would have two children. And we did have two children. And she told me about my future career in electronics. And it was difficult for her because she was seeing devices that she was not familiar with because they weren't invented yet. And she saw me inside of this room with all these cables and monitors. And she was having trouble describing that. And one day that happened. When I saw that, I said, oh, this is what she was talking about. And so everything she said did come true, every last prediction. Now, then it ended, and then Duff went, and then we got in our car, and we drove to Daytona, and then things really get, that's where things got interesting, because in the car, Duff says something to me that the lady did not say. He says, boy, that was some good reading, especially that stuff about you. And I said, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And he says, well, she said someday you're going to be world famous. You're going to discover or invent something. And I couldn't remember any more than that. And that stuck with me. And I said, what? How come she didn't tell me when I was in the room? And I thought about that. I said, that was deliberate. She didn't want me
Well, she didn't want you getting possessed by big ideas, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's only so much that can be revealed. You don't want to pollute the timeline and get somebody working on something ahead of schedule, ahead of the plan.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's almost like Back to the Future, isn't it?
It is. So, well, this is going to become more clear. This is just the start of a whole series of clues that relate over time. So there was that little interesting thing that now I couldn't get that out of my head. I was going to discover something or invent something or whatever. So, you know, that kind of stuck with me. But, you know, I moved on. A year later, there was a psychic that came to the school where I worked. I worked at the community college, and I went down for the library, and I recorded this session. His name was Russ Burgess. He was a psychic and an entertainer, and he had us do, in a room, and I was recording that. And he had this thing where he says, look, I'm going to want everybody to write a question down. So I wrote the question down about the invention, thinking, well, let's see, who knows, maybe something will happen here. He'll give me more detail. And so the first question he got, now he's blindfolded three different ways, so he can't actually read the question. He feels it and then gets the question in the person's name, which he got correctly. And as soon as he picked up mine, the hairs on the back of my neck went up. I says, I know he's got mine. I don't know how I know that, but I could feel it. And sure enough, the first question was, the piece of paper he picked up was mine. And he got the question. He says, you want to know if you're going to be successful with this invention? And then he paused. There was a bit of silence. He was listening, I guess, to someone or something. And he says, yes, but it will take much longer than you think.
Hmm.
And so that sunk in my head. And I says, well, that's really interesting. I wonder how much longer. And so then times when, you know, I recorded some, you know, we talked about it some, and he went on to say that I had very unusual abilities of concentration. And he was telling the other people, don't expect such a good connection because this is difficult because Mark seems to be able to have this ability to concentrate or whatever. It went very well. The connection was very good. So then things went on. I filed that and I says, okay, well, there's something to it. Now I have confirmation from a second psychic. Then in the year 1977-78, I met Ann Gaiman, who was a very big psychic in our area at that time. And
were you psychic shopping then, as they call it? You know, were you starting to, you got so into it that you kept looking for these people?
Well, I looked at it as a resource. I says, this is a way to talk to God. The afterlife, if it really exists, means there's really a God, because you can't have an afterlife without a God. Mm-hmm. These people are going somewhere. And so now I'm in my head, I'm trying to gather evidence. But most of the time when I went to the psychic, it was for other reasons, not this theory stuff, this invention stuff or whatever. I was going because, as you'll see, I went for reasons, personal reasons, basically the same reasons everybody else goes, mm-hmm. which is basically personal, having to do with relationships or money or health. And with Ann Gaiman, it was a health concern that I knew she was speaking that night. I took my wife with me at the time, my first wife, and my mother was very sick. She was dying from a brain tumor, and I was thinking of dropping out of tech school. I had just started tech school, and I was just going to go, me and my wife would go stay with my father and help him take care of my mom. And I was thinking, should I drop out of school? Is this a mistake or not? So I decided to go to her that night and ask that question. So we walk into the auditorium, and it's before the show. I see her sitting in the back with her notes or whatever, and I walk up to her. Before I can even get the question out of me, she looks at me with these startled eyes. And she says, I just saw a bunch of angels streak by you with this look of great concern and fear. And they're telling me, do not quit school, which kind of surprised me, because I thought they would just go with the, you know, go ahead, that's a good idea. Take some time, help your father.
And so, she had no idea of your question at that point.
Not as I recall. I mean, this is what I remember is many, many years ago, but she was right to the point, and what she saw was unusual, for her to see. She never sees angels that worried about something. And there was a bunch of them, apparently. So what I recall is that she answered it directly. I don't even know if I got the chance to ask it or not. I don't remember asking it, but it was going to be asked at any rate. And the question was definitively answered immediately. And she says, you do not quit school. You need to stay in school and complete that. And so what I did is I did stay in school, and I helped my dad on the side because we were still living in town. But she went and started the lecture by saying that this was very unusual. She's never seen angels in such a concerned state in rushing by somebody as it was. She opened a lecture with that comments about that. So that logged in my head. I says, why are so many people involved? Why do they care that I go to tech school or not? Why is that a big deal? And so that worked on my mind a little bit. Then we go down. For many years, I don't do anything more with psychics until around 1985 or 1986. And at this time now, my first wife and I were having marriage problems, mainly due to money and stuff. And at this time, I'm trying to do inventions. I'm trying to discover something.
Okay, and what are you trying to discover?
Well, I had the idea, since it was a vague sort of thing, invention, I don't really know what that means exactly, discover, invent, whatever. So I was trying to invent a perpetual motion machine because I thought that would be a very handy thing for generating electric power. So that's mainly what I focused on. In later years, I did some programming. I did some other things with video recording and video streaming and stuff. But
But you started at the top, though. I mean, people have been trying to invent a perpetual motion machine for as long as there've been people, I think. Almost.
Well, I do think it's possible, and I did. I don't want to give away too much here because I don't want to get that person in trouble. But at one point I met a person, not going to say whether they're male or female. I met a person who worked for a power company. And this person worked in the patents department. And this person said, I've seen patents that'll change the world. We have stuff that we buy and we just shelve it.
Boy, so that stuff goes on, eh?
So odds are somebody has invented a perpetual motion machine, and that's what you need to generate power.
Right, and then probably the car that runs on water, too. I've always thought maybe that that one's sitting somewhere.
That's probably sitting somewhere as well. And so if people wanted to really investigate, do an investigation of the patents office and who owns particular patents and perpetual motion, or like you say, the water powered car or whatever, there's things out there, you sometimes you see somebody discover something, then it just drops into a hole. There's another one I could tell you about, but I think we should leave that for right now and proceed on.
Okay.
With the next event.
You've intrigued me now.
Yes. The next event clearly proves there is an afterlife. So I go to this marriage counseling psychic named June Rigg in the 1985-1986 time frame. Now, while I'm in here, at the beginning, the first session I had with her, this one, I'm certain I did not ask. It was just spoken. It was a direct hit. She says, now, to preface it, I used to pray. My mother had passed by now, and I used to pray to her at night. We used to have a conversation in my mind. I would just tell her how my day went and everything. There was a yellow chair in the bedroom, and I would ask her, I would invite her to sit in the chair, and then I would just talk about my day and say prayers or whatever. And now June says, your mother has heard you. She has been sitting in the chair in the bedroom when you were praying, just like you asked. I never said for her to tell me that. I never told her that. I never told that to anybody, not even my wife. The only person that knew that was me, and it was in my head only. So that woman was a direct hit, proving to me beyond any shadow of a doubt, there is an afterlife, and people don't die. They go on. Their consciousness goes on. They're alive on in heaven, in this other world, this other dimension. So that very much got my attention. And then it eventually got around to we were talking about the problems, and I was wanting to build things. And I had no money because it was all gone. And I don't want to get into where and how and what, but that's what we were arguing about. And so she tells me about, I ask about the invention, because I don't know what it is. You know, it's just a vague idea of something, and I'm trying to work on it ahead of time, which I was not supposed to really be doing. That's why the first one didn't tell me directly, because she knew I would start working, or they knew I would start working on it too soon. It had to unfold. One's life has to unfold. It has to go to plan, and that's working early on the thing is not according to plan.
Can I ask you just, and I don't want to interrupt you too much or take you off down a little extra path here. You know, look, I've visited psychics in my life. I have periods of going to them looking for guidance when I've been lost, even recently, I've got to say. But my hit rate with psychics is nothing like yours. It seems that you never put a foot wrong with them. They were always right. Now, I've been to a lot of psychics in my time, and the majority of them have not been right, and some of them have been astonishingly right.
No, I've been to one. I went to Casadega years later, and that one was terrible.
Okay.
She did not hit on anything. It was just somebody we picked at random, and the hit rate was awful. So I developed a test over the years that I could tell if they were – I actually went to two that were terrible. And if they can't answer the question of and what I do is I ask them, what will I do, be in my final years? Because at least three out of the four main ones that I went to told me about this right the first thing out of their mouth to say, you will be a spiritual teacher in your final years. And that's over like 40 years of psychics, how they would each know that and tell me that. It's very unusual. But the ones that, you know, don't get it, they really are bad. There's some fakes out there. There are some mentalists that just go on what you answer and reply. And so you got to be wary of that. You know, they're not all...
As I've discovered, I think there are some that may be deluded about themselves. But you know,
exactly.
I think we can both agree that there are some who appear to have something. Sorry, I interrupted, but I just wanted to ask you that.
No, that's a good point. I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did that. Getting back to Martha. So I do say, yeah, I'm trying to invent something. And then she paused and listened. She says, it's not time yet. You don't have everything you need. You just got to let this flow and not worry about it right now. Basically, that was her message to me. You don't have everything you need. And so I started pondering about that over the years. I said, what the hell do I need? I'm trying to figure that out. Well, I did figure it out. And she was absolutely right. I didn't have everything I need. And what I needed, very important, was the internet and the World Wide Web, because I did 99% of my research using the World Wide Web. If I didn't have that, I couldn't have found all these facts and details. I went back hundreds of years to read documents by people like Maxwell and Newton, because I had to know what they were thinking, their model, their physical model. That's what I was interested in. And without the internet, I couldn't have done it. So she was right.
Okay, so you are 65 now, aren't you? Are you?
I'm 65, yes.
All right, so the big spurt for you then came in the latter part of your life, really, after the age of 45, because we didn't really have the internet, did we, until the 90s?
Right. I think I first came upon it in 93, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at it and I saw two ideas right away. digital money, which now they call Bitcoin. I had that idea around 93. Of course, I never realized it. I just kind of designed it in my head and said, that could work, digital money. And 5, 6, 7 years later, whatever it was, it showed up. And massive online gaming. I saw that immediately when I saw the internet, and that came out very quickly. But that's what I needed. I needed the internet. That was a direct hit again. That was the missing ingredient. Without that, I couldn't invent or discover whatever it was that I was going to do. And I still wasn't sure. I mean, I didn't have it in my head that I was going to do the unified field theory or I was going to solve that problem. I knew I had to work on something, and I knew it was going to be big, because who would listen to a guy who's an electronics expert or a computer guy about spiritual matters? Whatever it was, it was going to have to be like a near-death experience or something, something big that's going to get people to listen. And what's in my book is very big. It is the unified field theory solution. And I'm challenging physicists, so I'll make this announcement now. In the last chapter in my book, there's experiments that can be done using high magnetics. Do those experiments and you will find that gravity can be canceled with the use of high magnetics. I'm absolutely.
And when you talk about high magnetics, are you talking about, I mean, look, on a basic level, I'm kind of thinking Philadelphia experiment here.
Philadelphia experiment was a version of a high magnetics. I actually get into that in the second to the last chapter of my book, because that leads into the Stargate technology that I talk about. But high magnetics, I mean like hundreds of Teslas. I don't mean just a few thousand Gauss or whatever, like you find in a magnet or whatever. I mean the guys that are using these superconducting magnets are using high amounts of power to generate incredibly intense magnetic fields. You need, like I read in this one book that this guy had written many, many years ago, when they were doing investigations in Project Blue Book, one of the Air Force investigators brought a magnometer to the landing site, and they measured, and they took up some of the grass and measured the grass was magnetized. And I remember reading that as a teenager, and I says, whoa, magnetism has something to do with anti-gravity fields. And that stuck in my head for the rest of my life. I kept looking for that link.
Okay, and do you think that is why what we call flying saucers, if they exist, are sometimes able to propel themselves upwards at rapid velocity, or indeed in any other direction, it seems?
Yes, because you not only have to cancel gravity, and of course the magnetism can also be used for propulsion, and that's one of the discoveries. There's at least like 6 Nobel Prize winning ideas in the book that I've written. One of them is how to propel.
You say that you have created 6 Nobel Prize winning potentially ideas.
Yeah. Well, anti-gravity discovery is one. The origin of mass discovery, how gravity works, the unified field theory is 2. The stellar converter, how to undo or reverse the effects of a black hole. That's a hell of an invention. That's 3. The discovery of the slip wave. Why particles move? Nobody knows why electrons are constant motion, why photons. They don't know the mechanism. That's in the book.
What is the slip wave spatial bias drive?
The slip wave spatial bias drive. I discovered while researching how particles move, I had to come up with a mechanical scheme for self-propulsion. Like the photon, its motion is autonomous. It can fly through space at the speed of light for billions of years. I mean, if we were to build a rocket ship and try and do that, it would take all the energy of the universe to get it up to that speed. How does the photon do it with no rocket ship behind it or any other means? So the slip wave is, this gets a little technical here. I describe it in detail in the book, but it's basically every particle is an electrostatic charge, and an electrostatic charge is a twist of space. It's a spatial inversion. And as that happens, as the space inverts, is twisted, if you imagine that in your mind in a three-dimensional way, the further you go, the less dense space becomes and the higher the tension. But basically what forms is a pressure gradient field inside of the particle. A pressure gradient is what you need in order to have motion. And so the particle internally has a pressure gradient, and that gives it a velocity, a motion in a specific direction. And that is the slip wave. So now that's done with an electrostatic charge, but the charge, that structure then causes the particle to move. And that's essential for creating magnetism, because magnetism only happens when charges move. And so the final part of that theory is, well, okay, so they move. What are they moving through? You need something to be moving through to be affected by this motion. And that's the ether, which I go into in great detail in the book, proving the ether does exist. And so that's the fundamental field. So the slip wave is a method by which all particles move. And you could build your own using a magnetic field, because a magnetic field is a rotational reaction to moving charge. So if you create a strong magnetic field and layer it with concentric rings of magnets, of coils, let's say around a cigar-shaped UFO, you start with the first ring with a very high intensity magnetic field. Then the next one is stronger. Then the next one is stronger. Then the final one at the back of the ship is the strongest field, the most intense. This will force, it creates a bubble around the ship and forces it forward while canceling gravity. And the other thing that you mentioned was, why aren't we affected? Inertia is also canceled inside of the slip wave. So they can accelerate at enormous speeds, like from 100 miles an hour to 50,000 miles an hour in under a second, and not be killed by it.
So there's nothing holding us back. Okay, if you know this, though, surely others must know this. Are you kind of implying that this technology is known about, maybe by the government or the government behind the government, if you believe in such things, and maybe they're using it?
Yes, I have to be very careful what I say. So I'm going to say, I do not know this for absolute sure. I have not personally witnessed a government flying saucer. I strongly suspect, by the information that's already out there about recovered spacecraft and whatever, that they have reverse engineered, and they probably already know everything I just told you.
Okay, and if they do, why are we doing things like, building rockets to go to the International Space Station? Because we've got stuff already that can do much more than that.
Well, that's a very good question, and I've given that great thought. They have to keep this secret, or they feel they need to keep this technology secret, basically for this reason: strategic military advantage. That's pretty much says it all. He who has this technology dominates the skies. We already know from many sightings, especially from the Air Force and the Navy, the recent one in the Navy where they were following the Tic Tacs over off the California coast, those ships can quite literally fly circles around our best jet fighters.
Mm-hmm. So when you heard those Tic Tac reports, you were probably at home saying, told you so.
Yeah, I'm saying I know why they're the shape, because those simple geometric shapes are the easiest to build the field around. Because concentric rings will go perfectly around a cigar shape, a Tic Tac shape. You could do a saucer shape. Any simple geometric shapes can be built, triangles, those types of shapes, can have these concentric rings of magnetic coils built so that they can propel the craft. A Star Trek ship would not work. It's way too complex.
Really?
You can't Oh, no. No, that's going to be a fantasy thing. We're never going to build a ship with all these.
That's, you know, that's really sad because I've just seen an image of my mind of NCC 1701, the Enterprise, and that's not practical, you say. Now, listen, I interrupted you, and only because I'm trying to make sure that we get this all nice and clear. You said that there were six ideas in the book that were Nobel Prize winners, potentially. I think we got up to number three with the slip wave.
I think we got up to four.
All right.
I should write these down because now I'm trying to scramble around and figure
out. Well, it's okay, but the general flow of the discussion is fine.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of some of the others.
All right. Let's put it this way then.
There's at least four. Let's go.
All right. What else is cool in there? I think maybe that's a good way to put it. Let's not number things.
Okay. I should have it here. Well, I should try to go through the whole book in my mind and go through it now. I'm on the spot.
All right. Well, let's tackle it this way then. You know, the stuff that we've talked about already is pretty mind-blowing stuff. If you know these things.
Oh, I got another one.
All right.
The supercar.
The supercar.
The supercar, it's a hovercraft built using the slipwave technology. You can use it for the super ambulance, a device that can get you from the hospital to wherever you are in a matter of a minute or less. It's going to save a lot of lives. Another idea is Project Sunshade. Mm-hmm. Project Sunshade is using anti-gravity drones to construct a blinding system out in between the sun and us, somewhere between the sun and the earth, in a stationary orbit so that a shadow is cast upon the earth.
What, to control the weather?
To control the weather, yes. Mm-hmm. This is the most direct, immediate way that we could drop the temperature.
Okay.
And I figured it'd take from one, maybe 2 million square miles of sunshade to drop it 1 degree centigrade. That's certainly worthy of a...
Well, the only problem with that is, though, some people say that once you start doing that, then you have other consequences that you bring in and, you know, be careful what you wish for, right? Because you might get something else.
Well, we can always undo it because the blinds open and close automatically, so we can tweak it. Mm-hmm. Or just open them if we have to. But if we put it in the right spot, we can control hurricanes as well. So if we had the shading go over Hurricane Alley in the Caribbean and the Atlantic, we could theoretically prevent them from developing into Category 5 hurricanes. Mm-hmm. So there's great potential there as well.
Now, listen, I mean what I'm about to say in a really good way, because I'm a big fan. But when I'm talking to you, I'm seeing in my mind's eye Emmett Brown from Back to the Future. You know, Christopher Lloyd, that character. But he built his things. Mm-hmm. Are you if you're building the things that you're talking about, then everybody would know about you and you would be a multi-billionaire. But how are you building the things?
Am I? No.
How come?
I'm not very good at building things. My track record is not good. I'm not mechanically gifted to do stuff in it. And experimenting with, like, let's say the high power magnetics is just not something that I think I could do very well. But there are physicists who are very good at this stuff.
So you need to get yourself listened to by some of those people, do you?
That's why I'm telling them to do the experiment in the back of the book, because it's going to prove the theory of super relativity, and it's going to reveal to everyone that anti-gravity exists.
Right.
And
how does the, in words that I can understand, okay, now I am not scientific, and many of my listeners aren't either. Some of them are incredibly scientific because they send me emails to tell me where I've got all kinds of stuff completely wrong. So please don't send the emails. I know before you even send them. Give me a thumbnail sketch of the experiment if you can.
Well, it's basically you take a non-magnetic object, a piece of wood, plastic, whatever, suspended over a balance system. So you have it balanced so that the weight is even on either one. Then underneath that object that's suspended, you create an intense magnetic field. Another version is you surround it, and then you shield that device from the magnetic field, because you don't want the magnetic field directly influencing the object that's hanging in space, the non-magnetic, non-ferrous material. You don't want that to confuse the measurement results, because, you know, the pulling laterally could be mistaken as, you know, a drop in the gravitational field. So you have to do the proper experiment. So let's say you would suspend it to be safe and shield the magnetic field. So, you know, with a piece of magnetic shielding going across double layer, multi-layered, because there's different ways to shield magnetic fields, and suspend it over the intense field that's under it. So what that's going to do is block some of the gravitational field coming from the Earth, pulling directly down. So that thing will weigh less. Then the balances will just shift. Suddenly that thing that weighed precisely 1 pound will now weigh a half a pound, and the balance will tip. And they'll see a visual indication that the device, that the thing suddenly is lighter whenever the magnetic field is on directly underneath it. And there's guys that did notice that. There's a couple of scientists who also noticed that. One of them was Eugene Potlinoff, and the other one, I think her name was Ling Ni. I don't have her name right here, right off the bat, but both of those were doing experiments with rotating superconductors, and they noticed that things weighed less right above the rotating superconductors, but then they were silenced after time. They were kind of bought off. You know, they weren't murdered or anything. They just disappeared, and they stopped making reports about magnetism affecting gravity. So there's already some evidence, and I'll bet you people who work in the high magnetics labs probably noticed something too. And since the Air Force, my research indicated the Air Force is in every high magnetics lab in the United States. Why is the Air Force so interested in magnetic fields and superconductors?
Well, we know that magnetism has incredible uses. I mean, look at the magnetic levitational trains that already run.
Or the devices that shoot objects, the rail guns. That's another use for magnetism. But I think the Air Force was always looking in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s for people to have breakthroughs, especially in room temperature superconducting and high magnetics and power generation. They need a very powerful compact power source to drive the UFOs, and it has to be like in a small size, like the size of a basketball. So it needs to be extremely efficient and not too large. You can't drive around in a flying saucer with a nuclear power source. It's not safe. It's not practical. It's, you know, not going to work.
We left behind the psychic and the supernatural paranormal, you know, about 20-25 minutes ago. Where does all of that then tie into all of these things that you're telling me?
Well, each one is kind of hinting at something coming in the future, something big. And then there's more. I've had direct psychic experiences when I was going through my divorce, and I was going through all kinds of hellacious things going on. And I started to pray, and my prayers started getting answered. And one night I was just begging for help, and I fell asleep. And during the night I woke up and I sensed there were people in the room. And I had my eyes closed, but it was like I could see these images of a pinkish orange glow, and I could feel something squeezing my hand. And then I could hear something in my head, and it was a metallic sound. I couldn't make it out, and it was saying, zhing, zhing. And I listened. I stayed calm. I said, don't be afraid. Just try to figure out. Just calm yourself and listen. And I felt my hands squeezed, and then I heard zhing, zhing. And then I said, quiet, listen. And then suddenly it cleared up, and I could hear what they were saying. I felt my hands squeezed, and then I heard them say, did you feel that? Did you feel that? And why did they do that? Why did they come to me? Because I felt that I needed evidence. I was afraid, and they were comforting me. And that's what the guardian angels do. Everyone has these people. This is evidence that this exists and that they're working with me.
Okay, so you think that the tie-in here is that everything that you've been doing is guided. And that's yes. where the paranormal yes. ties into your science.
And this continues throughout my life. I go to the next one in 1993, 94, which is just after what I just spoke. Just before that, I want to go. There's another one that's very important that happened just before this time when I was still married. It's very important, very dramatic. I was driving home. I drive home to work. I go the same road every day. There's a T-section I can go right. The busy traffic is shorter. I can go left. It's country roads, takes a little longer, more peaceful. Almost every day I turn left. So I'm driving toward the T-section. I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to go left today. And then I hear a voice in my left ear. And I'm not talking, I heard it in my head. As if somebody were right next to my ear. And I heard it audibly. And it says, don't go that way. And I turned in the car to look to see if there was anybody behind me. Of course, there was nobody there. And I just tried to, well, I don't know what that was. Then I heard it again. It said, don't go that way. It was a male voice. Of course, being the curious person that I was, instead of heeding the warning, I went that way. Because I had to have evidence that what I just experienced was real. Because I heard a voice clear as day. And that never happened to me before or since.
I'm not going to knock that because I know that a lot of people have those things. And, you know, I suspect that there may well be something like that. I find the connection with the science that you do and these things, it's a little bit of a disjunction for me. But maybe I'm wrong.
I'm going to get you there. I'm working toward all of these things are proving that there's an afterlife. All of these things are proving I'm being guided. All these incidences are demonstrating for everyone there is an afterlife, there are spirit guides, and they're helping you with your life plan. I'm working on my life plan just like everybody else. I will freely admit my life plan is strange and obscure.
Okay, I don't think you're going to get a lot of people disagreeing with that. Now, we've got here 10 precious minutes. How can we use those?
All right. Well, basically, I went that way. And there was a terrific car accident that I narrowly avoided by inches, as there was a crazy man driving down a road, cutting across both lanes, forcing cars off the road.
Gee.
And so I should have listened, and I've apologized to my guardian angel, whose assignment was to protect me by not listening. And I feel bad about that to this day. But let's get to the final 10 minutes, because I go to this psychic many years later, after I finished my book, which I just kind of did as a retirement project, thinking I had a lot of good ideas. Let's put them all together into a book. It'll give me something to do in my retirement. So quickly, I have this incident where a bat comes into my house while I make a fire in a fireplace. It comes down. I have to catch it. I bring it outside. I notice that there's fluid in the bag that, as it flew away, I let it go. I said, oh, there's some fluid in there. I could have rabies on it. I better clean that. So I'm spraying and I'm cleaning it. Some of it splashes in my face right next to my eye. Now I panic. I go to the internet. I read you can get rabies that way. If you get rabies, it's 100% kill rate. So now I'm panicking. I haven't been to a psychic in 20 years. I go find a psychic. And I go back to the internet and I find one in Charlotte where I used to live. And her name was Tamara Calder Richardson. She's a Southern Belle medium. And I got to ask her, because the guys wouldn't give me the shot. I was pleading with the department to give me the shot, and they wouldn't give me the shot. So I went to her because of this bat thing to make sure I didn't have rabies. And she said, no, you didn't. You didn't get it. And it's been fine. It's been years now. But what she says is very interesting. It's extremely interesting, because I just in casual ask her, hey, I got this theory called super relativity. Is there anything to that? And then she goes into like a major trance, and my parents come through. Albert Einstein comes through, Ray Bradbury, Jesus. And they're saying, this was your life plan. This is what you got to do. And these are the things you now have to do to finish this. And what I'm doing right now, these talks, this is part of that task that I've been given. Einstein gave me something very important. How I know she was really talking to him, because for the last 4 years, I want to get this in really quick. Mm. I was looking for him to say that gravity is a contraction of space. So she doesn't know this. So the first thing Einstein says to me when she's talking or through her, she says, why is Einstein, he's got his hands spread apart and he's closing them together. His hands are coming together. Why is he doing that? And I say, oh my God, he's telling me that gravity is a contraction of space. There's no way she could have guessed that. That's a one in a million guess.
Mm, and that would be a great way of explaining it. What are you going to say to people hearing this now who say this man is wacko?
That's why I'm asking them to do the experiment in the book and to actually read the book. The theory itself makes sense. Mm-hmm. It makes extreme sense. It's much more sensible than anything quantum mechanics offers. And I realize, because of my unusual circumstances, that some people are going to say that, and I accept that's going to be some people's point of view. But what I'm hoping is going to happen is some physicists are going to look at this and say, hey, this theory is plausible. It makes sense.
Well, it seems to me that you're in a race to get that done. I'm trying to think of ways that you might be able to get this message to people, you know, people who matter. How are you going to do that?
Well, you know, I'm experimenting with different things. I'm writing on Quora. I'm writing explanations or answers to related questions, you know, talking about magnetism, gravity, the unified field theory.
Do you believe it's possible to travel in time?
Unfortunately, yes. And I talk about that. I don't like the idea of going back in time. And I warn in the book, I plead with the United States not to do it. And I do believe it's happening. And it all has to do with time theory, and that all of time is going on at the same moment. And we were living in different time segments, but they're in parallel. So it is possible, according to my theory and according to what I've read.
So if they're all in parallel, if you go to another one and you make any kind of changes there, it's going to really screw up the others.
Yes, that's my concern. And then people have noticed these changes, or at least in theory, through the Mandela effect. Mm. And there are people saying that things are changing, subtle things, but things might be changing. If you do it too much and you do it too often, you're going to pollute that timeline. And then you're going to have a real problem. Mm-hmm. And I don't even want to go where that could go. It could lead to time wars. It's just
time
a bad
wars.
Yes. If more than one person gets this technology and they're doing this and they don't like what the other person's doing, then they go back to undo what that person's doing. This is really a bad idea.
Jeez, I don't mind. That sounds like a recipe for absolute breakdown, Armageddon, whatever you want to call it.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So we're at the back end of this conversation now, and there's an awful lot to take in. And I know we probably have only scratched the surface here. Your book is called Master of Reality. Is that you?
I think the picture, I am the old man and the child. So I guess it's me. I was the student, now I am the teacher. And reality is really comes from God. And I got to say, God is real. He's the creator. It's an intelligent design system. And figuring out how it works is the road to unified field theory, because the creator is the one. And I have in my book many cases, well, not in the book, but on my website, talk about many near-death experiences where people who have talked to God, talked to Jesus, come back and say that this creation was done by God. So who's best to figure out how things work? If you want to know how something works, you go to the creator and you ask him. And basically, that's what I've done. I've said, hey, I'm going to take a chance here and say that this stuff is real. There is an afterlife. There is a God. I'm convinced. So I'm going to utilize that ability of some people have either through near-death experiences or through psychic abilities to get answers to questions. And since I'm the person, I guess, who's been assigned this task of bringing this into our reality, I'm getting more answers than most people would get. I don't think most people could cause Einstein to come up.
Why do you think, I mean, this is one of the last questions I want to ask, but why do you think that you've been picked and rather than me or somebody else?
I've asked the question because I have not a real high opinion of myself in a lot of ways. And I say, why me? I mean, I'm an introvert. I never went to physics school or college to study physics. And the answer they gave me is because, well, one, they chose me. This is a direct quote from the other side. We picked you because we knew we could trust you.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, I mean, that's the highest praise of all, isn't it? Have you given yourself a time limit? In other words, you know, you want science to discover your experiment and do it and discover the other things you're saying. I mean, have you said, well, if this doesn't happen by 2025, I'm giving up?
I think my wife would like me to do that because she's really grounded and down-to-earth person. She accepts what is happening as real, which is something considering how...
So she doesn't think you're crazy, which that's good.
No.
That's no, very, very, very good. I mean, yeah. You've got you've got an uphill climb here. It's not going to be easy.
Right.
Well, I mean, all climbs are uphill, but you know what I'm saying. You know, so if there was a scientist in this world you would want to contact, what kind of, without giving a name, because there are loads of scientists out there, what kind of scientist would you like to sit up and take notice?
I would like Witten, because he's the best math guy there is, but he's really heavy into string theory and into quantum mechanics. I would have to convert him, basically get him to realize that quantum mechanics isn't right, and utilize him along with a great mechanical engineer and a great electrical engineer and a great software engineer, and somehow he could do the formulations, finalize. I have some formulations in my book, but what I need is, generically speaking, is a physicist with an open mind who's willing to use the techniques that Einstein used and Newton used, which is basically differential equations, to formalize my theory. I do have the one equation I think is vitally important. It's called the moment of inertia equation. I modified it slightly so it can be used to explain the masses of the neutron and the proton. And that basically proves my unified field theory.
Wow. I think we've probably consumed as much road as we can with this. And I need to sit down with a great big cup of coffee and think back over this conversation, Mark. What's that website if people want to check you out? Because they will.
www.super-relativity.com.
Okay, well, thank you for being kind about my lack of knowledge of science, because I need to know more. And thank you for your time, Mark. You know, food for thought, big time. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That is food for thought, definitely. Your thoughts about Mark Fiorentino, what you've just heard, gratefully received. I'm not sure what to make of any of it. But that's the nature of the show that we're doing here, you know? Free speech is what it's all about, really. And while you may be shaking your head saying, I don't get any of that, or I didn't understand it, or it may not be right, how do you know? And that's why I have these conversations with all kinds of people. And that's why I've been doing what I've been doing for a chunk of my life. More guests in the pipeline here on The Unexplained with myself, Howard Hughes. So until next we meet, please, whatever you do, stay safe. Please stay calm. And above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.